And welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. I'm Richard Dugan, your host. We come your way every Saturday from 3 to 4 p.m. Pacific Time. We stream live at richarddugan.com and newspress.com. And we are also rebroadcast on Sundays at 3 p.m. Pacific Time on a2zen.fm. We archive the programs as well at the richarddugan.com radio shows page, where you can listen to these interviews again and again and glean more and more information. We're also linked to our guests' websites, and you can then go to their websites and you can check out the information that they have to offer. I would love to have, if I had the time and the energy and really the necessity to put all kinds of great information about my guests on my website on a permanent basis, but I'm a firm believer in not reinventing the wheel. They have the website, they have the information, so I send them to you. I send you to them, and hopefully them to you, and then you can check it out, get firsthand information. Well, I have to tell you that this program is taking place during a time of, I'm going to say, great upheaval, especially here in the great state of California. Because as my guest and I begin to speak, there is the concept of utter chaos going on, especially within the petroleum fuel market. Supposedly, there are all kinds of different conditions that they're telling us that are actually causing the markets to ratchet up the cost of fuel in the state of California by 10, 20, 30, who knows, maybe even 40 cents in less than 3 days. It's absolutely astounding. But then again, this kind of goes towards, I think, what my guest will talk about in our program as part of the birth pangs of the new world that we're looking towards. My guest is the producer, the creator, the visionary, if you will, the man who took all of the information that I was already familiar with and put it into a format that probably makes more sense and has more optimism behind it than anything. My guest is Foster Gamble, and Foster, I want to thank you so much for joining us on the program.
You're welcome, Richard. It's a pleasure to be here.
And the beautiful thing for you and I is that this isn't costing us 1 gallon of fuel.
Very efficient.
I certainly hope it is. And it is rather interesting that it's only happening in the state of California. It's not happening anywhere else in the country. And again, this is at the time of this broadcast, of this program that we're talking. But it's they say it's temporary. They say it's short-lived, which means, hopefully, that things will return to quote-unquote normal, whatever that means. But even that term, going back to normal, is almost mythological in the sense that there really isn't anything that's normal about life these days. What is it, that REM song, it's the end of the world as we know it? And every day that seems to come true with new information coming out. And you have taken that information from so many different areas. And I have to tell you, I have watched the movie Thrive from end to end. And I have to say that I got 3/4 of the way through going, boy, this guy is not making me feel real good. I'm not real happy about all. I mean, I'm not disagreeing with the information and the conclusions that you make, but I'm thinking, you know, I don't know what the point of living is anymore, because all of this looks so dire. It looks so depressing. And that's not to say that the movie is depressing. It's just my perception thereof. But you have a very strong optimism, as do many of our guests, about the future. First of all, Thrive takes a myriad of different subjects, from fuel and the control thereof, governments and politics, religion, science, and then also weaves into it some of the, we'll call them phenomena, that are found around the world over the centuries and even to this day. One in particular, crop circles. I mean, I've been watching some of the History Channel's connection of humans and aliens and all of this, and it continues to ask more and more questions. You talk about, you touch upon sacred geometry, and the list just goes on. How in the world did you decide that I need to take all of these little pieces of this puzzle and put them together And it seems as though you figured out how they go together.
Well, I actually decided when I was in college that I wanted to make this movie, but I didn't have the answers to the questions that I was asking. I was a filmmaker in college, actually co-created the film department at Princeton when I was there because they didn't have one, and I wanted to be making films, and so they gave us a budget to go out and get some 16-millimeter wine Bolexes and some moviolas and gave us a room in the art department, and so I just started making films then, and people assumed that I would go on to Hollywood and keep making films, but when I graduated from college, it was at a time when we were invading Cambodia for no good reason that I could find, and I was discovering that we were destroying our environment. We were under the risk of nuclear holocaust, and that's the world I was going out into. So I was deeply concerned, and at the same time, I found out that I was going to inherit some money from my grandparents. Not a ton, but enough. I mean, a very sweet kind of winning of a little lottery that I would be able to decide what I wanted to do with most of my time and maybe help some people along the way. And so I really searched my soul at that time and decided to dedicate my life at that point to finding out what is in the way of human beings thriving and what can we do about it. So I told my friends, if I find that out, then I'll make a movie. And I thought it might take, you know, maybe even 5 years or something. Well, here we are 40 years later, and I'm finally I got to make the film that I wanted to make all my life, but that most of my life was spent trying to go behind the scenes, meet the people, read the books, put together the facts that finally made sense of what was in the way of our thriving and what we could do about it. Because I didn't want to put this film out just as a bunch of bad news until I felt that the solutions were as coherent and grounded as the problems, as the agenda that was in the way of our thriving. And that's why this film is coming out now.
Well, you, I'm sure, had to know that when you started touching on certain subjects, there were going to be those people who are going to say, oh, there goes Foster's and that job, and he's one of those wackos that believes that. Because when the movie first starts, you start talking in particular about one individual whose discoveries and inventions could have, here in the 21st century, could have made huge, huge differences in the ways in which we would be living. And that's Nikola Tesla. Mm-hmm. And yet so many people today think, whether they have a vested interest in the present power system or not, you know, he was just some wacky guy, you know, and he was paranoid, and he's in the same categories as Howard Hughes, you know, nut job and germaphobe and on and on and on. And my biggest, and of course, and even people question the validity of the story that says that the U.S. government went in and destroyed his lab and all of his materials, to which the question would be raised, well, if he was just a kook and none of his stuff mattered, then why would the government do that? Of course, then there's the question, do we have evidence the government actually did this? I mean, it raises the specter of the investigator, being you, Foster, that, you know, you're kind of going off on tangents. Can we deal with some reality here? Can we deal with what's really going on in the world and not some of these fringe dwellers? And I have to say that I've seen a couple of movies about Tesla. I don't know that much, but I know enough. And it just seems to me that being this the land of opportunity, and I believe Tesla was an immigrant himself, that if this was the land of opportunity, he was denied that if the stories are true, and that certain individuals, if they come up with the wrong idea, counter to, you know, what the powers that be want, then those ideas end up disappearing. And we don't get to benefit as a society and a civilization and a race of people called man from those incredible inventions and discoveries. And we and the planet suffer.
Yeah. Well, you know, back in the 70s and 80s, they came out with some electric cars. And they started to get very popular, and then they got squashed, literally. They had only been leased, not stolen. I mean, not sold. And they, the powers that be collected all those cars and literally crushed them and put them in a dump. This is all recorded in the in the documentary Who Killed the Electric Car,
mm-hmm.
and now finally we're starting to get access to electric cars. There were probably 60 to 70 years ago, there were carburetors that could get over 100 miles to a gallon, and even before that, here was Nikola Tesla wanting to beam free energy just like radio or television signals so that people could stick an antenna in their backyard and just pull the energy down. He was being funded by J.P. Morgan, who unfortunately was the person who owned the monopoly on most of the copper in those days. And so he would have lost out on that fortune if people started getting energy right out of the air. Well, who needs the copper wires anymore? So the funding was withdrawn by J.P. Morgan. So it's a long story of people who have these genius inventions that will actually serve humanity being suppressed by people with other agendas for money and control. And that's where we are today in the so-called free energy area also. I mentioned in the movie, for those who haven't seen it, and go much more deeply on our website, into the fact that I've been privileged to visit numerous labs where I've seen these devices sitting on benches that literally pull energy out of space itself. Because it turns out that we don't live in a vacuum. We live in a plenum of virtually infinite energy at every point, and advanced physicists will agree to that. So then the question is, how do you tap that energy? We've been tapping energy with a very macho approach. We've been burning things, we've been crushing things, we've been exploding things, we've been trying to fuse things together and then control the explosion. Well, we've taken that about as far as we can go without literally exploding life on Earth as we know it. Fortunately, it turns out if you approach energy, which is ubiquitous, if you approach it in a more feminine way and actually follow its dance, if you mimic this fundamental energy pattern that we talk about in Thrive called the torus, this donut-shaped whirlpool vortex, if you mimic that and you have the right materials, you have the right geometries, this is where the sacred geometry and crop circles come in, and then you get a field rotating at the right frequency, then the universe will just start pouring out clean, abundant electricity. And that's the good news. These technologies already exist. I've seen multiple ones. The bad news is that virtually every lab that I know of who was successful has been raided, literally by FBI SWAT teams, and shut down, the equipment taken, lives threatened. Sometimes inventors have been hurt or killed. And so they've been putting out the message, you're not going to be allowed to provide humanity with something that undermines our $200 trillion piggy bank that's still in the ground in terms of oil and coal and natural gas, and you're not going to democratize the access to energy and therefore undermine our control of human lives. Now, fortunately, since Thrive came out, people knew that we had fact-checked everything. This was accurate first-hand information, and that we were taking a lot of risks by putting all this information out. So I'm happy to say that I've been contacted by over 100 different inventors in the energy, medical, and water fields who have just absolutely astounding things going on, and they're really concerned. You know, how can we get these beneficial devices out to the world without being stopped or even killed? So we're in that moment in the energy area, like we are in so many other areas, where we're at this critical fork in the road, where do we actually go into this realm of chaos, where the powers that want to be can impose their police state because everything is collapsing, and you know, the economy, the environment, global pandemics and so forth, and oh please daddy save us, you know, bring in this police state, which is I think their plan. Or do we actually complete the amazing emergences of localized economies and organic food and healthy free energy devices, you know, a true free market in healthy possibilities. And rather than going down the fork to oblivion, we actually go into a kind of utopia. Not like unrealistic, not that everybody's going to get along and this and that, but truly unleashing the healthy creativity of humanity. And that's where we are right now, and that's why we put out Thrive and the website and what we call our Solutions Hub.
Thrive the Movie is available at your website, and all you have to do is Google Thrive the Movie. Boom, it's going to take you right there. You can watch it for free. All you do is just, you know, you put in some very minor information there, and you're off and running. And as I said, I've watched it, showed it. As a matter of fact, we were able to watch it on our it's available on, I think I'm correct, it's available on YouTube as well. As a matter of fact, I think that's how we watched it.
We particularly encourage people to watch it for free at our website, thrivemovement.com, because then you'll be embedded in all the other information, all the fact-checking, all of the
people
involved,
the
major areas of human endeavor. We've really gone in and spent decades analyzing what are the critical issues, what's the vision that would be a thriving one, and then what are the steps that we can take to get there.
Well, I know that there are people out there, and I sort of count myself amongst them, who, and I've only been around, Foster, I've only been around for 52 years, okay? I have a short little time here on this planet.
Spring chicken.
And I got to tell you, I'm already tired.
Yeah.
I'm exhausted. And I can only imagine how my 81-year-old father must be feeling, having raised 6 kids, having gone through the machine the way he has over the last 81 years of doing nothing more than the 8-hour-a-day, 5-day-a-week, 40 hours of working for I don't know how many years he worked, 30, 40, something like that, to provide food on the table and fuel in the car and so forth. And to what end? So that his children would repeat that same process and their children? I'm a great uncle. My sister's daughter had a child just recently. Is that the future that she has to look forward to?
Yeah. Well, it doesn't have to be like that. I've been working with some economists working out what would it be like for an average family if we had not only access to free energy, but honest money, where we had an actual commodities-backed solid currency, and so that people weren't getting ripped off by involuntary taxation, by covert inflation, and all the, you know, the bailouts, the subsidies, all the things that the financial elite are doing to steal out of most people's pockets. And listen to this, Richard. Imagine, each of you who's listening, imagine if tomorrow you had between 6 and 10 times the assets and income that you have today working the same or less. Obviously, you'd need to work less if you had 6 times in the bank and coming in from what you were doing. And that's what these economists are telling me it would look like simply with an honest system that released these technologies and had honest money.
And
so
with
that kind of income, you'd be probably working 3 or 4 days a week doing what you wanted to do, and you'd have plenty of money left over to, choose where you wanted your kids to go to school and to help people around you who were in need, and then to create or invest in companies that were doing healthy things for the planet. Imagine what that world would be like.
Yeah, and we've been talking about that. One of the goals of this program is to look for those new ways of living. The current ways of living aren't working. The argument would say, well, what are you talking about? And I'd say, just look out the window. Just look at the world around you and tell me that the ways in which we are living are fostering a healthy, well-adjusted society. And I will leave the ways of living alone. There, it's not working. People are getting left behind. And you can put any label you want on that. People are being trampled. And the list just goes on and on. However, there are many other aspects to this this movie that you put together, and it's interesting to me how, and I'm guessing this is by design, that the powers that have been and are and will be, so to speak, for the foreseeable future, have designed the system to be so complex it's next to impossible for an individual to truly comprehend what's going on. I look at the financial institution. I look at that aspect of our world, and I mean literally our world. And I listen to what they're saying, especially, for example, in this time in which you and I are talking about California's current little gas shortage they're claiming. And I'm hearing the explanations as to why. It's like, wait a minute, that doesn't make any sense.
Right.
It makes absolutely no sense. And gasoline is the only commodity that I know of that literally can fluctuate, not just on a daily basis, but throughout the day. Whereas a loaf of bread on the shelf in a grocery store, the price doesn't change that often.
Yep.
And so something is wrong with the system. And this has less to do with the fact that this is fuel for us to be able to get around, but more to do with the complexities that have been built into the whole system that make it impossible for us to understand what's going on. I remember when I was a kid growing up, Foster, and I was told from a governmental standpoint, debt was good. You want a certain amount of debt. And today, oh, debt is bad. You want to get rid of debt. Don't have debt, you know. And I was like, wait a minute. How did the economic rules change? 2 + 2 is still 4. That hasn't changed. So how is it that, you know, it makes no sense. But you also talk about otherworldly influences. And when I look at, and tell me again the name of this sphere, this donut-shaped sphere.
No, it's actually, it's not a sphere because it's open in the middle.
Right, but
it's called a torus.
Torus.
T-O-R-U-S. It's not the astrological sign or the car.
Right.
It simply means a continuous surface with a hole in the middle.
But there's a connection to other worlds, if you will, or other civilizations, other technologies, other than earthly, that you make a connection to. Tell us about that.
Well, let me go there, but start where you were just talking about this complexity.
Okay.
Because, of course, we're living in a very complex world. But one of the things that I found in my research is that the complexity that we're confronted with in so many different areas is actually an intentional smokescreen to keep us from understanding. So the virtually every market, whether it's gasoline or gold or our energy, is rigged. And we're told by the so-called experts, leave it to us because economics is so complicated that, you know, we'll take care of it. Let us centrally control the economy. Well, and I certainly was kind of lulled into that for most of my life until things started falling apart, and I had to know what the heck is going on. So as I looked into it, I realized that, hey, the bottom line is these so-called experts have created a scam that they don't want us to understand, where they get to create money whenever they want, share it at top dollar with their cronies, and then start lending it out to us at very high interest rates later on, meanwhile destroying the regular currency and economies and always benefiting themselves and empowering them to get elected, go to war, grab other people's resources and all that. So it actually isn't that complicated. Well, it's the same thing with energy. And if we're told that we've got to have all these complex devices that can, you know, like the accelerator in Switzerland right now, where they spend billions and billions of dollars to accelerate these protons to see if they can find this particle which lasts for a trillionth of a second, like somehow that's going to give us access to energy. When the truth of the matter is, all you have to do is look at how energy moves. And the only pattern that sustains a healthy system, as far as we can tell, throughout our entire universe, is this torus pattern. Whether it's the electromagnetic field around a live seed, a human body, a sun, a solar system, a galaxy, a cluster, and now they're even saying the universe itself. So if, in fact, that's what the universe is showing us, a blueprint for sustainability, and all we have to do is mimic that in a healthy way to access free energy, then wow, that's great news. But no, that is not only obfuscated, it's suppressed. And this is where it ties in to the so-called extraterrestrial. A lot of people have said, you know, you really undermine the credibility of your film about economics and solutions because you put in that wild stuff about ET UFOs. Other people who've had direct contact with ETs or seen UFOs and so forth, they say, oh, I love that part, but you shouldn't have gone into conspiracy, or, you know, you shouldn't have gone into free energy. Or something. Well, our job was not to be popular. Our job was to expose the fundamental lies that are destroying life on our planet and to knit together the threads, to connect the dots that show a coherent story. And one of those major dots is that we apparently not only are being visited by many species of extraterrestrials, but we have been for centuries, if not millennia. And I'm not just saying that because I saw some video somewhere. You know, in the film, we've got a few clips from interviews recorded by Stephen Greer of the Disclosure Project, who's recorded over 500 interviews in depth with high-level government, military, FAA officials, and pilots reporting their direct experience. So, you know, it's tough to write that off as some, you know, tinfoil hat, wacky nut job.
Yeah.
So if you start there and then look at the thousands of hours of footage of these ships, and then I spent some time going around talking to the most credible contactees that I could find who actually reported having been on a ship with various creatures.
Yeah.
And I know that this sounds really wild until you start amassing this evidence and talking to these people who are very credible, whose lives sometimes have been shattered by the experience and by trying to share the experience with people. These are not glory seekers. These are people who, you know, went through a paradigm-shifting experience and are trying to wake people up about it. But one of the interesting things, Richard, that ties this together is that I interviewed several different individuals who had been on a ship several times and had been actually given the gift of being shown the drive of the ship. It's like someone, you know, they got their 57 Chevy and they pop the hood for you and says, look at that baby, look at how that runs.
Mm-hmm.
And these people did not know each other, and they all reported the same drive. And it's all this kind of rainbow Taurus. It's this kind of plasma field that is in this Taurus shape. And like the free energy devices that I've seen, it's accessing the energy anywhere in the universe. Because if you're traveling from another, you know, solar system, much less another galaxy, you are not packing, you know, Chevron in the tank.
Right.
You know, you're not burning fossil fuels. You're not even going through time and space as we would normally think of it. Otherwise, you're committing yourself to, you know, thousands of generations just to get to Earth for a visit. I don't think that's how it's happening.
Mm.
Well, it turns out that this pattern is also laid out very clearly, like an operations manual, in hundreds of crop circles. And I'm not talking about the obvious hoax crop circles with, you know, asymmetries and footprints and all that kind of stuff. I'm talking about this stuff with electromagnetic anomalies, absolute perfect geometries, and stalks that are, you know, bent over almost at right angles without killing the plant.
Right.
And again, you know, I've studied advanced physics and spatial geometry all my life, so I was able to recognize these patterns that are usually a representation of 3D, and that's why I came to the conclusion in the movie that one of the things I think that's going on with the crop circles is we are being shown by more advanced beings than we how energy works so that we can learn to access it non-violently and harmoniously, because they are very concerned about what we're doing not only to this planet but to the whole electromagnetic field that we're embedded in, particularly by nuclear technologies. Mm. They started showing up, you know, in vaster numbers in 1947. That's when Roswell happened, and so many sightings since then, because that was immediately following our first explosion of nuclear weapons.
Right. My guest is Foster Gamble. We're going to continue talking more about not only the movie Thrive, which is available on YouTube. It's available at the website. And by the way, is that Thrive the movie? Is the website people want to go to, thrivethemovie.com?
No, It's Thrive Movement.
Movement. Thrive Movement, which you can get involved in as well. There's so much information. I've been to the website. I've surfed around it and checked out different pieces of information. You can watch the whole movie. You can watch the clips. You can see who's involved in the film, who's been interviewed, get more information about Foster. Your wife's involved. We'll talk about that as well. And we'll continue talking here on Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and you are listening to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. And welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. I'm Richard Dugan, and we're talking with Foster Gamble of Thrive Movement. And we are looking forward to getting more information from him as we continue on. This, to me, is fascinating, Foster, because as I've reiterated in our first segment, there's a longing by many of us, not for the good old days, but for the good new days.
Yes.
I had the opportunity of interviewing a woman who has written a book about transitioning to the golden age in 2032. I'm not sure I can wait that long, quite honestly. Nonetheless, she's very optimistic. But also for many of our other guests, Greg Braden, for example, who has shared with us, we've been around this turn at least four other times.
Yes.
And that's in human history, and we're talking thousands or tens of thousands of years.
Yes.
And
I've actually listened to your interview with Greg. It was a very interesting one, and talk about new paradigms. If for people to realize that we're being visited by conscious entities that could be, you know, 1 million, 2 million years or more ahead of us.
Yeah.
Imagine the problems that they have solved, and if they've been visiting for millennia and sharing their technology, sharing their awareness with cultures before us, it all of a sudden starts to make a lot of sense, some of these artifacts that we're finding of much more ancient cultures and advanced cultures than we had ever thought was possible, or we've been taught in school was possible, on this planet. And what we need to do this time is figure out how to get along with each other and how to access technologies that don't threaten life on this planet as we know it.
Well, I am always astounded by his story about the sheeted glass in Pakistan and how in the world that came about, and his description thereof, and then the questions that it raises, you answer those, raises more questions, and so on and so forth. And I suppose, granted, it is entirely up to us. We have to do this. But at the same time, I'm sitting here wondering, are these beings, these conscious beings who have been visiting us, are they going to step in at the last minute and save us, or are they going to leave us to our own devices if we make the same turn and make the same choices again for the fifth time? If, in fact, it's only been five, or, as far as what people are saying, is four times, this is number five, could this be 5,000? I mean, my goodness, why are we not getting it? What seems to be the stumbling block? And some of my guests are saying the stumbling block, if you will, is that the issue has to do with raising our consciousness, raising our awareness. A gentleman that I spoke with just recently, and you can talk on this as well, said that evolution, and I remember now who it was, and I can't believe I the name didn't pop into my mind because he's good friends with Greg Braden, and that's Bruce Lipton, who talks about the fact that the evolutionary process of man has nothing to do with losing a couple of teeth over the next 1,000 years or growing a third physical eye in the middle of the forehead. It has to do with the species evolving to the next level in regards to community, and that it is something that is so far beyond our understanding right now that you couldn't even use the word democracy to describe it because it isn't that. And it isn't socialism and it isn't communism or fascism or any of the other isms that you want to put on it. Because our consciousness is not raised to that level yet, we can't comprehend how great that's going to be. But there are people here in this world right now who are trying, who are creating communities, who are using the phrases buy local, you know, and so forth. Think global, buy local, I think is kind of the term. I'm very fortunate that where I live, and I think you are as well, where, you know, we have farmers markets and we could conceivably live blocks from where we work just because of the landscape and so forth. And so on. And there are people that are actually creating those kinds of communities. There are designers. There are futuristic designers like Jacques Fresco who have created, through his architectural designs and drawings, cities where you don't need a car. They're available, but you don't necessarily need them because you work and play and live right where your home is and right where your workplace is. And you're doing, as you described earlier, what you really want to do. And by the way, that's something I find interesting that people seem to forget. There are actually people who enjoy dealing with sanitation and some of what we would consider the more mundane. There are people who actually enjoy those things.
And most of that can be automated anyway if they don't.
Sure. It's just like we all don't want to do the same thing. We all have different desires. I mean, that's part of the individuality aspect. But we are all connected. And I think that's something else that you also researched and found, that we are all intertwined, that I affect you and you affect me. And it goes to one of those sayings, those things that I always used to hear as I was growing up, that, Richard, you can't change other people. And I found out that's a lie. Now, I can't do it consciously, and I shouldn't even try, but the reality is as I change myself, as I grow, as I raise my consciousness, as I raise my educational level, and I start interacting with the people around me, I change them.
Yeah. Well, Richard, you brought up my favorite topic of all, and what I think is, with all the areas that I've researched, I think this is the single most important topic for humanity at this time in history. And if we can get this one, we can thrive as a species. And if we don't get it, then I'm not so optimistic about the future of humanity on planet Earth. And it has to do with this new paradigm of raising consciousness, of wholeness, of interconnectedness, and so forth. And let me just take a moment to share my view on it, because it's another area like the ones we talked about with money and energy and so forth, where the area has been obfuscated to, well, like we're kind of told that, well, some brilliant futurists are going to figure this out, and then they're going to tell us what we need to do, and then you know, it might work and so forth. I want to suggest that it's actually the single simplest thing in human consciousness for two reasons. One is that it's not enough to raise our consciousness. It really matters what we're becoming more conscious of. And I suggest that the single most important thing that we need to become conscious of is that it's not okay to violate anyone else ever except in self-defense. And that's the one thing that I've found that everyone I've ever talked to in any country in the world agrees with. So if that's what the one thing that everybody agrees with, then I think there's a good chance that maybe that's a core navigating insight, as we call it, for creating a sustainable society. And on the one hand, it seems obvious. It's kind of like the golden rule, except even better, because you're not treating them the way you want to be treated. You're treating them the way they want to be treated. But at the same time that it seems so obvious, we're indoctrinated from early childhood that we can't get along without an authoritarian state to organize us, to basically tell us what we can and can't do. But people don't stop to realize that authoritarian state depends always, anywhere in the world, on involuntary taxation for its survival. And then, so they take your money, your hard-earned money, you know, go off and do things like foreign wars and subsidies and bailouts and interest on the Federal Reserve, fake debt and all that. They do that with it. But even the very act of taking your money without your permission in the first place is not an ethical or moral foundation for a sustainable society. So what I suggest in Thrive, and this is the main conversation that I think I'll be in for the rest of my life, because frankly hardly anyone has thought this through yet, is that the fundamental sustainable energy pattern, the Taurus, at the human level, is not the nation state. It's not even the community. It's the individual. And if we then need to honor that Taurus field of each individual, you can't violate their person, you can't take their property, you can't threaten them with guns, you can't, you know, send them off to your wars of aggression and that type of thing, then I think we've got the key. And from that begins a whole different society. People who are safe and who are healthy and so forth obviously naturally want to come together in families, in communities, in, you know, regional cooperative efforts and so forth. But the key is it voluntary? Because if it's not voluntary, then someone has been given the right, you know, had legislation that's authorized them to put on a uniform, whether it's a military uniform or a presidential suit with a flag in the lapel. They put on a uniform and been given a title, and all of a sudden they have rights to take your stuff and to throw you in jail if you don't give it to them, or shoot you if you resist. That's a right that other human beings don't have. And that's the fundamental lie that has led humanity to the brink of destruction, in my opinion. I would say, you know, I'm about to turn 65, and if I had to identify why I came here this lifetime, it was to try and figure out what is the fundamental lie that has humanity at the risk of destroying itself and the planet as we know it. And if I had to encapsulate it, it's fundamentally this, that we have no excuse that is okay for violating the sanctity of each individual's person and for initiating force against someone else in anything other than self-defense. And once we recognize that, then we have what we call in the movie distinct and unified. Each of us is a distinct sacred being, unified with everyone else, but not subjugated to them. And I won't even go on further than that because I want to keep it simple, but this is what I'm trying to educate the world about, this opportunity, because we're simply not taught it in government-funded schools. We're not taught it in our religious institutions. We're not taught it by our families and friends, because that might seem unpatriotic, or, you know, it might seem selfish if you think that the rights of the individual come before the so-called, you know, good of the group. But unless we sort out that lie and stop creating excuses to violate people, then I would not be nearly as optimistic as I am about the future of humanity.
Foster, it's incredible to have the opportunity to talk with you about these things. I'll go back about a half a step on what you just stated. I've been doing reading over the last 30 or 40 years or so since I began my search at the age of 17. And I refer to them as the ancient wisdom teachings. And nowhere have I read that the life and lifestyle that you and I live today under the present paradigm is the way it is what was intended for us. As a matter of fact, we were I'll use a biblical passage. Jesus was asked when doing certain works, of whether it was turning water into wine or healing someone. He says, "Wow, that's incredible." To which he responded basically, "Hey, that's nothing. But hey, guys, you think this is great? You guys are going to do even greater things than me." Now, yeah. I don't know if that's levitation and telepathy or if it's just going to be kindness to one another.
Yes, but exactly.
The ancient wisdom teachings basically say that this way that we are living as spiritual beings in human bodies is beneath us. It's demeaning. It's insulting. And why are we continuing to do this? And it goes to the core of what you just shared with us, then it is.
Yeah.
I mean, if we truly believe that we were created by God and we were given a purpose, as I go back to what I said at the beginning of the program, is our purpose solely to have children who will have children who will have children to continue to perpetuate the treadmill that our parents and grandparents were on?
Yes.
And I don't see that as, I tell you what, I'd rather come back as a bear or a crocodile next time. Okay? You know, because at least I would have a much a stress-free life.
Well, unless human beings wake up, those bears and crocodiles might be extinct by the time you're coming back.
Well, that could be.
But I think you've hit it right on the head with purpose.
Because,
yeah. As far as I can tell, and some of my major mentors have really helped me with this, particularly a man named Arthur Young, that there is nothing that exists except as a function of purpose. And so if we human beings exist, then we are in fact purpose incarnate. And I highly recommend that people, whether you're really motivated already and already have, you know, projects that are working great and can amplify them by connecting on our solutions network hub on our website, or if you're just someone who's distressed about what's going on and feeling helpless because you're one person and the powers that be look so, you know, almighty and everything, I recommend that you go there and start exploring what we call our Thrive Solutions Toolkit. Mm. And in that process, we invite you to begin looking inside first. And first of all, identify your own purpose as best you can. And then ask yourself, what sector of human endeavor am I most drawn toward making better? Is it environment or health or science or arts or spirituality or whatever? And then ask yourself, what specific level of engagement am I most drawn to? Do I want to meet immediate needs in a soup kitchen or a hospital or something like that? Or do I want to work with the system, with the media systems, political systems, money systems, and so forth, to try to make those systems work better so that there aren't so many immediate needs not being met? Or do I want to work on the consciousness shift itself? Because we're all of our actions come from what we believe to be true. And there's a lot of falsehood in what most of us believe to be true. So most people are drawn toward one of those particular levels. And if you identify your purpose, your sector, and that level, all of a sudden you're honing in on your calling in life. And what you'll find is that you can find a specific issue that matches those, start working on it, but use the Solutions Hub to connect with people from other sectors in your local region or to connect through our website with people who are working in the same sectors or on the same issues all over the world. And all of a sudden, you can relax into working on your calling, but you're part of a whole system now that is working in every sector and on every major issue, but now we're all helping each other. And what we've found is, you know, we just put this part of the website up about 2.5 months ago. We've got, today it's 349 different groups have signed up from over 40 countries around the world. And they're starting to help each other, so everybody's not reinventing the wheel.
Yes.
So they're sharing lawsuits and petitions and artwork and flyers and so forth, and just cooperating so that everybody can come up to speed with whoever is most advanced and can share stories of what really works and what doesn't work. And this way, we're creating a global, decentralized, leaderless network of people who are doing effective action. And we're being contacted by major networks, including Occupy, from all over the world, who like the way we're organizing this, and it's completely in alignment with natural principles. The communication is toroidal. The structure is the vector equilibrium, which we talk about in the movie, the basic structure that creates a stable structure anywhere in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're doing then is simply providing the tools to empower self-creating and self-linking movements all over the planet.
I have to tell you that I started thinking about the tenor of this program today. I don't like going into a lot of the fear and the negativity and so forth. And I got to thinking about that. It's not fear. From my perspective, it's more sadness. It's more sorrow.
Yeah.
That we have gotten to this point. And I realize that that's not going to help matters much to sit around and being sorrowful. But the reality is that that's where I am right now. That I try to stay optimistic. And the place that I am able to regain that is when I go home. I live on a mountain above the Santa Barbara Valley, as we like to call it.
Mm-hmm.
And I have chickens and dogs and cats and all kinds of other little creatures roaming the property where we live. And so I'm able to get back to some semblance of center with the natural accoutrements, if you will,
right,
of my home life. I really enjoy getting up the hill and out of civilization for a while. And I think that with what you have to offer through your website, thrivemovement.com, I think that people will begin to realize and understand that this is another one of those new ways of living. It may be foreign to the ways in which we've been taught. See, I think this is the key in the last couple of moments. I think the key is that we have to, when we come in contact with a new paradigm that may intellectually and emotionally sound foreign and contrary and even adversarial to our present position, as you were commenting, you know, it may not be real patriotic to put it in these contexts, but if you go within and it resonates with you, you need to stop and think about that.
Yeah.
That this is not a competitive paradigm. This is the next paradigm. Evolution, whether you believe in the Darwinian concepts or not, evolution does happen. Why do you think you go to school? That's an educational evolution. You start out learning shapes and colors, and eventually you're moving symbols around on a chalkboard like a physicist.
Yeah.
And you begin to understand some of the higher things. That is evolution. So when you start hearing things like this, go within. Stop a few moments. If you can find a quiet place. So here we've got the beach, we've got parks, we've got mountains. And just sit, think about, ponder what Foster has shared with us here on the program and see if any of this stuff rings even remotely true. And if it does even remotely, then ponder it a little longer. I'm not sitting here saying we need to sit at your feet and worship you because you've come up with this great thing. Far be it from me to say that. We need to start actually looking at and listening to and embracing some of these new concepts. And a lot of people, you just mentioned, 300 and some odd groups around the world who are beginning the process of embracing the idea that there's another way. And I want to thank you so much for the movie and for this time on this program.
Well, you are welcome. It's been an absolute pleasure to talk with you. And I just want to be very clear with the audience that I'm not recommending in any way some sort of, you know, blind-eyed optimism. I'm suggesting that people just look inside and find out who they really are and what they're here for. And as you start investigating things, you'll recognize that there are billions of brilliant creative people all over the planet who are waking up to what's really going on, who absolutely would give you the shirt off their back in a storm, are starting to collaborate on really grounded, positive solutions. And I recommend you go to our Solutions Hub, but also to the Solutions Strategy section of our website, and you'll see a whole three-stage plan that we've laid out for not only what it could look like in a truly free, safe, healthy world, but stages that we can take to get from here to there, which honor the best of kind of the core compassion and ethics and strategies of both the progressive and conservative movements, and then really transcend them both, moving into a society that's really based on honoring the wholeness of every individual.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time and your wife's time. I know the two of you are working on this together, and it's great to have a partner who is right there side by side working. She has her own ideas, too, I know, as do you. But the reality is that you two work together on this project and on many other things, I'm sure. And I would love to have the both of you back on the program in the near future to give us an update and talk more about this. This, to me, this is fascinating stuff.
Yes. I'm sorry that Kimberly couldn't be here today, but she was the producer, the director, and co-writer of Thrive, and my co-creative partner in everything. And so I look forward to your audience being able to hear from her one day as well.
Absolutely. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World. Once again, Foster Gamble, and the website is thrivemovement.com. Until next Saturday at this same time with New Paradigms for a New World, I'm Richard Dugan on Tell Me Your Story. Love to all.